Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira. And this week, we're going to be talking about what to do when you're in the middle of it. But we're not talking about just life. We're talking about midterm elections.
Midterm elections.
So in the middle of it, this is our midterm elections roundup. We've been using this platform to discuss a number of issues that have to do with Christians as citizens. And it's important to kind of bring these things to the forefront. And while it is great to focus on event-based participation, such as get out the vote, okay, for this particular election, I think it's important as we do that work, because that resonates with some people, that we actually talk about impacting voter behavior so that it becomes a part of what people are doing. To demonstrate an awareness of their political climate, I think there's value in participating in the citizenship. So it's not just what can I get out of it and, you know, I'm all for me. I think there's enough of that going on. And we're going to get into how, you know, the last election kind of showed us really in really stark detail that we're not all looking out for one another.
No, we're not.
Okay.
We got family that, I guess, act like family when you fighting. So, yeah, we learned some things last time. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. We learned some things. So we're bouncing back from that. But again, it's very important to be steadfast, you know, when there's a long process. And our political process is kind of long. So, you know, every president gets a term for 4 years. And the midterms refer to the elections that happen at his midway point, the 2 year point. Okay, so we kind of know the administrative or the administration situation that we're in, and we are 2 years beyond the election of 2016.
It's 2 years, it seems like.
Eight.
We've been on this for a while, the media. And the part of the problem is, unlike past administrations, the story is exclusively politics for 2 years straight.
Yeah.
And so you don't get anything about green energy, you know, things going on locally.
You would have to go seeking that information for it to kind of rise to the top. You would have to have a very carefully curated timeline on across all of your social media to make sure that your preferences rise to the top as opposed to the clickbait and things. But I also feel like that is by design because in entertainment and places where number of views or number of spins turns into some sort of value, you want to be mentioned all the time. And what we have right now is a person and a whole management team that is fixated on how much they're mentioned. They don't even care if it's good news or bad news. So right now I hear what you're saying, because the media cycle is crushing. And we've talked about that. It's crushing. It's overwhelmed. Because what? Because if you get tired of listening to it or watching it, then you're not going to catch that one thing that you needed to catch that, you know, finally broke through.
Yeah, we're in this perfect storm, this confluence where you have an administration whose wheelhouse is reality television.
Yeah, confusion and conflict.
And so that keeps viewers tuning in. Mm-hmm. And then you also have a media who is also leaning entertainment. So
yes,
when you see a news network that is on 24 hours a day and you're seeing political pundits or analysts and they're saying things like personal viewpoints and things like that, that's crossed the boundary from news to something else. It's just entertaining you at that point. And you have the splits between liberal and conservative media and things like that. So it's very difficult to get a news outlet that exclusively reports the news.
Right.
And at this point, you have to ask yourself, would that be interesting enough for me to tune in? Like, would I want to listen to a deadpan delivery of story, you know, story after story?
So I will say that I find my sources to be mixed a lot more now. And that probably started happening years ago. But I'm glad that I was used to, you know, seeking information, let's say in a long film format like a documentary, or watching, I have the patience, depending on what's going on, to watch a C-SPAN or to, you know, just kind of take in something that is not normal. Well, not so much normal, but it's not like it's a party on TV. I do not watch reality television that much.
C-SPAN is weird for me. Like, it's like one of those things. I remember a friend of mine one time, she was like, yo, you got to look at this website. And so I went to the website and it was like a safari camera at night looking at a pride of lions. And it was just the lions were roaming around. They weren't doing
being
much.
Cute. They were roaming around. Being gorgeous.
You know, tails swaying and things. I was like, what am I watching? That's C-SPAN to me. It's like nothing is happening.
Okay. So not that we're getting ready to get
it's
into.
It's the big brother of news.
Yeah. So it's like, it's first person, really no filter documentation of the event. So some things are boring. I will give you that, because I don't think they put a lot into the editing, and then they have a lot of, let's say, community to directly to a almost like a Charlie Rose-ish type of personality who's just like, I'm going to take your call. I'm going to entertain you for 2 minutes and I'm really going to break your question down as far as I can break it. I have a PhD in, you know, political science. Like, I'm going to give you all this energy. And then when it comes to hearings and things, if you want to watch them uninterrupted, you can always tune into C-SPAN and see what's going on. But you can also tune into now, you know, depending on what the angle is, a CNN, a Fox News, this, that, and the third. And with the partisanship and the emergence of the entertainment, if you don't know how to, remember we had a conversation about knowing what a primary source was.
Yeah.
You know, do you know how to conduct research with primary sources as opposed to persuasive articles, as opposed to things that you find on clickbait on the internet? Do you know how to decipher the difference? And it's the same thing with our online and visual media. Do you know the difference between something that's been put together to hold your attention because you have a low attention span versus to increase your access to information because you might be a low information viewer?
Well, no, I don't think it's an attention span thing for me. I think it's more.
No, not even for you, but for people.
Yeah, but C-SPAN, I'll even give them the benefit of the doubt. For instance, if I was buying a car,
mm-hmm.
I would go to the dealer and I would, you know, investigate which options are in this car. And then I would try to get the package that works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever bought a car from like Enterprise or something? So Enterprise sells cars after they've been driven for about 10,000 miles or so.
Right.
If you ever get in one of these cars, it's a great value. You know, you get nothing in this car. There's no frills at all.
Right.
Like, you may not have
formal rental.
You may not have air conditioning. It's just missing some critical components.
That's
what C-SPAN feels like to me. It's like, this is the bare bones of news. So it's not like my attention can't hold it. It's like, I don't want to drive that car on a road trip. Like, this is not comfortable.
I get it. But I also like that type of stuff. So it's not going to turn me off that much. But again, to the point, I know where I'm going to go look for resources. And I'm not intimidated by coming across a fact set that doesn't fit my preconceived notion about an issue. So I can watch something on TV and then I can seek out some other source about it. Not everybody's doing that with their news, because again, it's no point in seeking out certain multiple sources because the root source is already lying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, we have a lot of that. We have a lot of purposed misinformation in the mix right now. We have a lot of questions that should have clear fact and opinion lines breaking down into he said, she said on purpose, just to keep people away from being able to follow facts. And this becomes critical when you're asking people to vote, because you're asking them to vote on an issue in as much as they understand it, right? Even if their understanding of an issue is that the Democrat says this, or the Republican says this, or the Independent says this, therefore I agree, right? So we're asking for people to affirm in some ways where they stand on issues. And, you know, just getting back to why this is so important is that, you know, the election in 2016, I think, threw people for a loop. And it was kind of like Brexit, where everybody stood to the side and figured they could play with their vote and somebody else would do the hard, heavy lifting of sound and responsible citizenship. Mm-hmm. And nobody did it. Nobody could reliably pass the buck on and on and on, because little did we know that in the privacy of the voting booth, people were going to do certain things. Now, there's some people who said, I knew. Right. I knew, because we have policies right now that are indicative of people doing what? Either praying for you or thoughts and prayers or, you know, saying one thing to you. But the policies don't change because how they vote for the people who put those policies in place don't change. That election of 2016 let us know that everybody's not thinking right is right and wrong is wrong the same way, or how far is too far with the same measure. So the 2018 midterms give us an opportunity to correct some of that overcompensation in that area. People were playing, and now they see the reality of, well, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, taken such a risk with my affirmation of where I stand and where I hope my country goes. Now, not everybody took that as an accident. Some people on purpose voted for the ship to go the way mm-hmm. that it's going. So the midterms also give us an opportunity for those people who sat home maybe and said it doesn't matter, and who now are impacted or can see how much it matters. Here's an opportunity before the next presidential election to jump in. We've talked about the importance of the other chambers. We had a whole show about it's the courts. And because Congress is one way, swayed by an administration that is another way, now you have major questions about who's getting appointed to the Supreme Court. This is an opportunity to have your say on how you want either the current seat that's up for grabs, that is currently being nominated, not offered to him because I don't think he deserves it, but that's another show. Kavanaugh's currently nominated for the second seat. There might be a third in the next 2 years.
As of the recording of this show.
Yeah. And keep in mind, we record on Wednesdays, yeah. And again, that crushing news cycle is giving up some indications that things might not be the same by Friday. But we have possibly two Supreme Court seats that might need to be confirmed. This gives us an opportunity to look at who's in the Senate, mm-hmm. who's going to be on these committees, and who's going to be present for the full vote. That's important. We've seen the administration use executive orders to push through unpopular policies, and they seem like tests. Mm-hmm. Okay, they seem like tests. And we then clamor to the other two chambers to do something about it. We are calling Congress people. We are active. We are, you know, we're letting people know in the district offices and on the Hill offices that we're paying attention. Here's an opportunity. The whole House of Representatives, every seat, 435 seats up for grabs.
That's an amazing process.
November.
Just reset the whole thing, which is how it's possible for the House to be upset, right, or to overturned.
Right.
I think that the Brexit parallel is appropriate because
So many people had regret the very next day.
But not only that, there was an underlying sentiment that had been brewing mm-hmm. in the UK for years that had been ignored.
Yep.
And the Brexit vote was a surprise to the leadership to say, this is not just something that we're hearing about. This is something that's a significant movement. People really have strong feelings about this. And it was also something that started as... they didn't expect it to go the way it went. Even the proponents who started, even the proponents of that party, it was started as more of a way to gain some political capital. Right. But after the vote, they're like, uh-oh, we actually have to do something now.
So I kind of feel the same way about the GOP, that certain things have been entertained by the party, by the national structure, the state structures, and they end up creeping into policy. But now your policy is like a long plank off of a ship.
Yeah.
And you're being edged off the plank. And it's not, you know, to be fair, I feel like the same thing is happening within the Democratic Party, in that the plank is leading towards more progressive policies mm-hmm. and leaning a little bit further to the left, really to bring balance to what is, you know, at times a very ultra right approach to governing. But the GOP didn't even realize how much political capital they really had by appealing to the least of them, either class-wise or intellectually or whatever, because we don't want people to think that all of this happened because people see your virtue.
Right.
They also see your flaws, and they maximize and exploit your flaws. They use those things against you. This having been done, they got caught flat-footed because they weren't really ready to govern.
And that's the odd thing, because they had maintained control of both the Senate and mm-hmm. the House from the previous administration. Mm-hmm. So for Barack Obama's 8-year term, for the last 4 years, the GOP occupied Congress.
And I think that a lot of their commentary about what has worked and what hasn't worked has conveniently forgotten the level of obstructionism,
right.
You know, that people are still waiting to write about, because they want to see what happens over this 4 years to assess the comparison, right? So we can't forget that the Senate Majority Leader is still a man that when Barack Obama first got in office after his inauguration in 2009, he said, my number one goal is to make sure that he's a one-term president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That kind of lets you know that type of coded language has been uncoded, decoded, and now people are rawly saying things that used to be covered up in, you say, political correctness, but political correctness isn't to protect, let's say, the least powerful person in that communication exchange. Political correctness protects the feelings of the more powerful person,
mm-hmm.
right? It keeps me from calling a thing a thing.
Right.
So that you want to continue the conversation. And, you know, people change these definitions all the time, stretch them to fit their, you know, their means and what they want to be a champion of. But at the end of the day, we know what it is. It is walking and quacking like a duck. Okay. And I don't want anybody to get used to the duck quacking, because it seems like that's all everybody's going to allow, you know, to happen. The midterms are important. They're not just important for federal races. They are important for state races. They are important for local races. So let's just go over the slate. Let's go over the slate of what's at stake in 2018. Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, all 435 seats of the House are up for grabs. Some will remain safely Democrat or Republican, but there are a number of them that are in play. And if you change enough of the ones that are in play, you change the votes in the House. Okay. 35 seats in the Senate, 9 are in play to switch from red to blue. 36 governorships, including the state of Maryland. And you have numerous local councils, mayoral races, and other representatives. There are also municipal elections. You should be paying attention to your local elections, whether or not they are hiring new commission, you know, electing new commissioners, people to appointed seats or to, not appointed seats, but like we have a register of wills where I live, and clerks of the court and things of that nature. So you should be paying attention to those races as well. And then in certain areas, you might be also considering certain elected judgeships. That's a lot mm-hmm. when it comes to who runs your life, right?
Yeah, and we got to pay particular attention to those governorships that are up, because,
yeah.
Okay, so you have local elections for Board of Education,
mm-hmm.
things like that. Those matter for certain important areas, like say maybe education, development,
yeah, property taxes,
mm-hmm. law enforcement, things like that.
Yeah.
Those are all,
yeah, elections for sheriffs, yep. stuff like that.
The governor is the one that controls all of this at the local level. The governor is your president for
yep.
the most part. I mean, most people don't. We're in D.C., so we are not insulated from the federal government because it's so integral to our way of life.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of this, we understand why people do not connect what happens at the federal level with what happens at their local,
yeah.
in their county or district. But the governor is the one that influences that most heavily in
mm-hmm.
terms of who's appointed, how much funding is received mm-hmm. for things that are important to you. And so as people are wondering who should they vote for in their respective states, you make sure that governor is what you need. I mean, that they're not just proxies for whatever the administration is. They are actually working for you, and they will enact laws, i.e. voter registration. They will coordinate with your state senate to enact laws that matter to you. So those governor seats are very important.
They're extremely, extremely important. One of the other reasons why this administration has such deep reach is because currently we have a large number of GOP governorships. So there are policies that are being debated at the federal level about federal funds that go to states, i.e. for programs like Medicaid and Medicare. And in states like Arkansas and Wisconsin, which have GOP governors who are trying to enact policies that either make recipients work for their coverage, you know, have a work requirement for their coverage. They are testing exclusions from those proposed policies. And some of those exclusions are almost like a surgical implementation of like a redlining, where certain places and people and counties will have outsized repercussions to their access to federally funded programs because of how their legislature is going to implement those funds. So you have to participate, because the president as a figurehead is one thing. The administration, as far as a tone setter, is a whole nother. But as you alluded to, it is your governor and is your state legislature trickling down to your county and or your city that runs your life, runs your day-to-day life. Why your parking fines are so high, you know, what your property tax rate is going to be, what your water bill rates are going to be.
Before the Affordable Care Act, it was how your health care was set up. And those were programs that were implemented at the governor level before they were implemented at the federal level. So you have lots of the governor has all of the reach within the states. Yeah. Keep in mind, our states operate as individual bodies, and that is why we are the United States of America, because each state has its own. It's almost compartmentalized.
Yes, this is true. So that's what's in play. I think that's important. You know, let's just keep an eye on why would you come out in 2018. I think we need to talk about how people might feel about voting, especially in light of what a lot of people took as either the shock or the betrayal after the last election. So, like, how do you feel about a person who's like, I'm not doing it because it don't matter?
I think it's impossible to make that case at this point. Midterms are known for the party, the executive party, losing ground. That is typically what happens in these midterms. It happened with Bill Clinton in 94. It happened in, well, actually, it didn't happen in 2002. That was an anomaly. What happens is people see the job. People have a 2-year peek into the job.
It's like the president was on probation, and now this is his pep.
But only the people who are paying attention to that vote, and that's why voter turnout is usually lower in these midterms. But I think this midterm is set up to have the highest voter turnout. So I think that because of what people are seeing and how people are being impacted, and because we've been watching the news, all in this reality show has not gone off, people are saying, all right, either way, we want to make a difference.
And we're not the only people using our platform. So I can just imagine the amplification of, you know, picking up issues and making sure that for as much reach as you have, people get this information. So like, yeah, this is Faith Uncut, and your churches should be talking about it. In case they're not, we're talking about it. But I feel like across platforms, you can rely on even some of your social media faves and some of your more well-known entertainment personalities to kind of just say something. You know what I mean? Like, because now you have these examples. The gift and the curse of wanting all this attention is that you get attention for the stuff you don't want it for. So like, people who never probably thought that immigration was their jam have a problem with what's been going on with migrant children, you know, what's been going on at the border, the implementation of these border wall funds.
Work visas.
Yeah, all of these things, you know, in where we are, people voted one way and must have thought that they would be exempt from the very policies that they voted to put in place. But it didn't become real to them until they didn't get what they want. That's what politics is. Politics is about dividing resources to the point where somebody benefits, and yes, somebody loses, but I keep them from having direct violent conflict with one another.
I think one of the specific examples you're talking about is, which is actually, it's kind of amusing to me, because you had a group of voters in Dorchester County that voted for this current administration, and primarily because of its immigration policies or its immigration stance.
Yeah.
And so you got people saying, yes, we need to tighten
and
our borders.
Killed their workforce.
And so
killed it.
Now, when the visa program is implemented, they've lost over a third or two thirds of their workforce for picking crabs.
Yeah.
We live in like the Maryland, D.C. area. Crabs is a big business.
And it has exposed their wage system. It has exposed the nature of the work and what they've had to learn the hard way. What they've known the whole time is that, oh, Americans, you know, don't want to pick
crab meat.
Yeah, they don't want to pick crabs. This is too hard of a work. They, you know, I don't want to pay them what they really would have to be paid on the market. Okay, whatever. But you did not know when you were voting to break up somebody else's family or to discontinue their money that you were going to undercut your whole business.
Yeah, and I think they voted to keep them out. And what they ended up doing was keeping them out of the temporary work visa program that they needed to run the businesses. So the crab houses could not hire their workers that they were used to at the rates that they needed, which means they have crabs just sitting unpicked with none of these Americans who wanted these jobs. Now these are your jobs,
right?
And they don't want the jobs,
not
now.
Those jobs.
So they're losing money.
I'm not laughing, but
I am.
The price
of crabs is going
stupid.
Up. The stuff is not available. It affects the entire economy of this area.
Exactly.
So this is happening in different parts of the country for different industries, and it's like, well, you voted for this, so what do you want?
And then you do have some of those, you know, in this area. Again, we have a GOP governor or a Republican governor, but I do know that he's raised his profile by publicly not always accepting the tone of the administration. So he has political capital in the state because he's looking out for Marylanders while also belonging to a national political group that is kind of in turmoil. So we have a popular, you know, governor situation, even though this particular climate is very polarized, but it's the counties that put him in office that are suffering. You know what I mean? It's amazing when you go across the bridge. It's like, is this even the same place? But it's the same place.
I was listening to conservative radio because that's the only thing that's available on my way to the beach. And I was like, these people are... these are people... Like, I don't understand. Like, I was listening to this radio show. I don't remember. I don't name the radio show.
Yeah.
It's a black radio show. It's like a Fox News radio show. I was like, really? This is what's happening over here? This is the same state just across the bridge.
And some people say, you know, listen so that you'll hear what other people are hearing. But it just gets to the point where I'm like, how could you not know? You know?
No one's calling in the challenge.
Yeah, like how could you not know? How could you... But this is not to tear. I do not offer that in an attempt to tear anyone down, because people are very sensitive about their knowledge base. They're very sensitive about being, you know, they might be a person might regard themselves as simple, but they will hardly ever regard themselves as stupid or dumb or uninformed or any of those negative connotations to, you know, just being ignorant. I don't, for the person who honestly in good faith thought that they were being good, being given good information, I just say, listen more. You know what I mean?
So I learned a lot just seeing that rural side of the state, because the sales pitch for the DC area doesn't work out there. What they're more concerned about, like I'm driving by and I don't see a lot of businesses and high rises where there's office buildings and things like that. What I see is farmer's market, antique store, auto parts or auto repair, things like that. And that is repeated over and over again
until
you get to maybe a Walmart or something like that. But the economy is based around small businesses because these people, I'm like, how do these people afford to live out here? They have their own businesses. And I'm thinking, you know, if your whole livelihood is based off whether someone's coming in to buy this wagon wheel in my antique store, I have a different set of concerns than people in D.C.
True. Like,
and I'm thinking, we got to help my small business because nobody's buying this wagon wheel.
Right.
And they think that a change in administration is going to bring in the influx of wagoneers.
Well, because... And that's when you get into the marketing of the election, because all of those ads and, you know, why the Citizens United decision from 2010 was a game changer was that people invest money in how you understand what something is, how something is happening. So in both regions, whether you're, let's say, inside the Beltway or across the bridge, you can be in a bubble, if you will. Like in this DC area, we are way more informed about a whole lot of stuff because a lot of people's livelihood has to do with politics. People talk about it all the time. Yeah. They work for the government. They interact with other agencies, you know, on behalf of the government. That's the name of the game. Yeah, that's the name of the game. So people across the bridge sometimes are like, what about us? You know what I mean? Because it does look different. And if we only sit in our bubble, then we think that those areas are what we see or what we hear about in our media. Mm. So when you're over on the shore, it's a beautiful environment and a beautiful area, and you know these people care about the environment because they're surrounded by water, and you know agribusiness is huge, so agricultural business is huge. They don't want a whole bunch of toxins in their waterways and, you know, a whole bunch of smog in their air, anything like that. But in delivering that, it's like, we don't want that because that might have to do with our economy, with how we run business over here. And it's like, you would almost be trying to ask them to split hairs on a position. But if I get you to think that if you don't vote against something that keeps your water clean because it's going to raise your personal business taxes, you might choose your finances over the fish.
It's just hard. It's hard to imagine, like, how would I live like that? It's hard for, I'm amazed that people do that. But I'm looking at something like, you really got maybe five neighbors within a 10-mile radius,
yeah,
but you have an auto repair shop. Like, you really only have five families that you're drawing from. How difficult is it to stay in business? No. What I'm saying is they're doing it. I don't know how they're doing it, but I could understand if that were the situation that I was living in, mm-hmm. I would be looking for help. I may not understand what that help should look like.
Exactly. But
I know someone needs to help me out because no one's coming in to get their car fixed. Never mind the fact there's only five people around here, and I got a whole shop for five people. So, like, I understand the frustration.
Right.
But I also can't wrap my mind around how these businesses are. I understand, you know, farmers, whatever, mm-hmm. farmers market. You know, nobody's going to be like, nobody's coming to buy these grapes. You know, because you have outlets to sell things like that. But like I said, antique stores, you know, auto parts stores where things are so spread out.
Right.
It's just a different way of looking at life.
So here's an opportunity again. You know, we say, why participate? Because I just feel like people were slammed with the reality that everybody's not living in the same America. You know, everybody's not experiencing the same prosperous, you know, joyous, I don't know, pursuit of health and happiness, American ideal that we say that we are, or that we tell other people in other places that we are. There was such a huge disconnect between what people were living versus what they were being told that they're living, or what they're able to demonstrate, what they are able to affirm in their experiences. And we're here now. You know what I mean? So regardless of the differences, we're here now. And what we didn't have in 2016 that we have in 2018 is 2 years worth of evidence of how it's been working. Mm-hmm. Okay. And really, this particular show is about just calling a thing and asking people to participate. Apathy is really going to be the enemy of whatever we have going on in this country. Mm-hmm. Apathy, just not doing nothing about it, not participating, not wanting to think about it. And we have to be careful. We have talked about the stress. We have talked about people feeling, you know, hopeless or detached or disconnected. And it's not just something that might be going on in their relationships or inside their home and in their families. It could be going on between them and their organizations because people feel emboldened, you know, to behave a certain way or to say certain things. It could be happening to them within their churches. You could be having an issue with the political positioning that is being championed in your house of worship versus what you personally believe. And that sometimes those conflicts are enough to make you not do anything. Mm-hmm. This is really a plea for people not to do anything, right? So we want to participate. And, you know, yes, it's the middle, but it's a referendum. Usually the midterms give an indication to whoever's in power whether or not they're going to stay in power. Mm-hmm. So I would just love to send the message.
Especially this midterm, because there's some critical decisions at stake.
And let us not forget, like, let's bring some things back up to the level of awareness. You had a number of GOP Congress people in the Senate and in the House saying that they were going to retire. They're going to retire as opposed to fight for their seats because right. they don't want to be here whenever it goes down. Right. Something about to go down and they don't want to be here. Right. You have people who this administration has put people in the cabinet who were previously, you know, everybody works their way up from a state system into the federal system, however it may go. But now you need power players in the Senate who can counteract some of the energy coming from the agencies at the cabinet level, changing major policies. One thing that people have seen, if they've been paying attention, is that this particular president, the only thing he really knows how to do is to undo whatever was done before him.
Whatever Obama did, let's do the other thing.
Let's do the opposite thing, right. even if it's completely asinine. And we now have 2 years of evidence of that style of leadership and that style of management. This is an opportunity to ensure that the person that comes into your community saying, I'm going to serve you, is actually serving your interests when it comes to balancing that out, the checks and balances. So if you want to affect what type of policies wind their way or what type of budgets wind their way through from the House to the Senate, we're tired of these continuing resolutions, we need a budget, all of that, this is the time to send people who say, I'm going to work and I'm going to actually add back strength to one of the houses of government, one of the sections of government, to bring back a better checks and balances, right? If you don't like what 45 is doing, you don't have an opportunity to remove him by vote until 2020. You can remove some of his henchmen, though.
Also, now, I don't know who of our listeners this applies to, but industry jobs or industrial jobs mm-hmm. are not coming back. Like, that just doesn't... It's not realistic.
But they're different. You cannot reject the fact that you might need to adapt or evolve.
During the Industrial Revolution, we needed those jobs a lot more than we need now because we were producing everything here. Made in America was this great thing. It was a badge of pride. And we were able to be self-sustaining. And that was pre-globalization.
Mm-hmm.
And so nobody wants, like you want the steel jobs to come back here. So instead of paying whatever they're paying overseas now, they're paying minimum wage for workers to make steals. Now iPhones cost $5,000. Nobody wants that. Mm-hmm. So we got to understand that, you know, the old way of doing things
right.
may not be the way of the future.
Right.
And the way of the future may be something that we could look forward to.
It could
so
be.
So if the trades now were, let's say, energy jobs, making solar
they
panels.
Are green jobs, right. and energy
so
jobs.
We can learn new trades yep. and compete with the world again.
And we will need to. And again, it's about who is going to put their constituents in the best possible position to thrive and to grow. The jobs question is very close to, you know, my passions and my interests, because you don't get anywhere by rejecting the opportunity to educate yourself and to change. Mm-hmm. And it's getting to the point where the dissonance on training is just reaching an untenable point, because you will not have anything that you don't train up for. And some of the great gaps in our education system are showing. So we're trying to compete and to thrive in this 21st century marketplace. But we still have an educational system that will allow you to opt out between the 10th and the 11th grade, if not before. And because education is left to the states, everybody's system is different. Everybody's requirements are different. And then when our students get to post-secondary training options, you know, some are just barely prepared, some are not ready, and some are, you know, have had the benefit of great investment and they're very prepared to train on, you know, but whether it be college or getting a vocational trade accomplished, or any other sort of training. And appealing to people who wish for the past, you know, what things used to be, might get you some short-term political capital, but you can't deliver on that.
No.
You can't deliver on that. So, like, even right now, you know, the orchestration of tariffs and renegotiating NAFTA and all of that. This is a lot of grandstanding to make people who, when it really comes down to it, you refuse to train. You're literally refusing to let it go, something that has let go of you. The economy and the government cannot be held hostage by those who refuse to change. So this is also, you know, this is energy that kind of just says that. And it's important that we do that. And just, you know,
it's not just refusing to train. It's also refusing to, not that, that I guess I'm kind of split on this, because in valuing someone's humanity, you don't want to force them into something that they don't want to do. But if you're saying, I want jobs, and you don't want to take the available jobs, mm-hmm. then what? So you want jobs, and the jobs are picking crab meat.
Right.
You don't want that job. Or no. even some people who, you know.
But I feel like that conversation is not for the worker. That conversation, to me, ends up being for the organization. Because the worker does not have that much leverage to make the job more palatable. They only really have the leverage coming through the door to do the job. So like when we talk about, you know, okay, you can say industry jobs are not coming back. But there's a whole paragraph after that that says, because corporations have championed policies that make it easy for them to move jobs out of American markets so that they don't have to pay for American salaries and benefits and, you know, at market, all of this. So you can dangle it out there. But at the, I hate saying at the end of the day, but at the end of that day, the worker has the ability. The only way you're really going to outsmart the organization is to train up to be able to still be on the ship.
Yep.
Because the organization is in cahoots, again, with these henchmen who bring these bills to the floor that say, we don't even need paid sick leave. What is a vacation day? Why do you need unions? Mm-hmm. All of these states are going right to work. And it's like, people are like, I don't know. I'm just glad I got a job. But you don't realize even what a union has done for you. Your union takes 50,000 disparate employees across a huge organization. Think about people who work for a state, you know what I mean, doing a host of number of jobs. You belong to a union. That union counteracts those corporations that are doing business in that state who are like, make it better for me, sweeten my deal. What can you do for me? So when you have conversations at the local level about your mayors and whether or not your minimum wage should be rising. So when, like where I'm from or where I live in Baltimore, we had the question about a $15 per hour minimum wage. I personally don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that because I know that the policies right now that are saying that you don't even get a paid lunch are championed by people who live in a bigger house than you, mm-hmm. who have a bigger and better car than you, who are basically saying me first, you later, if ever.
Yep.
Okay, so like, let's really be, you know, again, at the end of the day, when I raise minimum wage to $15, it is up to the worker, the individual learner, to train up to be worth 22. Because capitalism does not work like that, and we're not going to continuously raise the floor.
Yeah, it's not that to me, and I'm not trying to play economist because I cannot do that. But if I am a CEO of a company,
mm-hmm.
and the minimum wage here is $15, and I'm required to provide health care here, and if I take these jobs overseas to, let's say, for no other reason, let's just say India or something,
mm-hmm.
like that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not required to pay that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not required to fund a health care plan,
mm-hmm.
I'm not required to do that, from a business standpoint, why? That's an easy choice for me. So for the American worker, what is my course of action? Like, do I support with my vote? Do I support the same people, the companies who do not have my best interests in mind, that do make decisions that make it hard for me to enter the workforce and stay competitive in the workforce? Do I support that line, or do I go the other route and say, well, who's helping us to make sure that maybe they can't take those jobs overseas? Which is, sounds like I'm making the argument of the current administration bring the job.
No, back. I think you're making the argument. So there's two. You can't have an argument unless there's two sides.
Yeah.
So that's it, you know. But what I'm saying is, look at where your organization, when Romney called corporations are people. So look at how those people are voting. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if your industry leaders and peers, right? So let's think about the mortgage crisis. Yes, you can look at just about any candidate that we would call an establishment candidate. So establishment meaning you've already served at least 1 to 2 terms and you're an incumbent. People just keep sending you back. Okay, you're an establishment candidate. You're not really that controversial, kind of middle of the road, either a Republican or a Democrat. And the organization is going to give you, you know, the max donation to your campaign. You could look at Democratic politicians and Republican politicians and see that. But you have to see, one, how that entity operates where local. All politics are local. So this is like asking somebody in Iowa whether or not you should have offshore drilling. They don't know. They don't care. You see what I'm saying? But ultimately, what are they saying? Oh, every American deserves a job because I need a job. So go ahead, have that offshore drilling because I want my brothers and sisters along the Gulf Coast to have a job or along the Atlantic Coast to have a job. They don't realize the environmental balance that would need to come to that because people from Iowa will go to that coast to go to the beach. Now, do you want to go to the beach with the oil on your feet? Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out not only what the two sides are, but then look at what kind of energy they keeping on the other side.
And then what happens after that? So, for instance, those companies who may find it advantageous to take those jobs overseas, but mm-hmm. we want to say bring them back so Americans can have them. The only way they're going to bring them back so Americans can have them is if they don't have to pay for that health care plan, which is why you see a repeal of Affordable Care Act, or they don't have to pay all of those taxes, which caused them to go overseas in the first place, which is why you see a reduction in the tax rate for corporations. Somebody pays for that, which means an increase mm-hmm. in taxes for the American people, or tariffs, or any number of other things that would entice companies to bring businesses or jobs back to the United States so they could balance the money that they're losing by coming back here.
And then that's when you get into, I think, larger discussions about what does it mean to gain? What does it mean to lose? Have we ever, and to me, questions that need to be kind of drilled down on, you know, is everybody doing what they can? Is everybody paying their fair share? I feel like a large number of Americans have been convinced that America is broke, meaning money-wise, like we ain't got no money, and they feel like cutting everybody else out saves the money, and they don't know that we're not that broke. So we've raised some really good issues here, and we're going to have to come back because we might need to talk about workforce and like kind of just making sure that you make the arc. You know what I mean? Like this is natural selection at this point. And regardless of where the question would go beyond, you know, do we make it sweet for the job creators or do we make it sweet for the workers, the job holders? I just think that we have to recognize that capitalism as a political system forces this question in more ways than one. And this is why it is important to impact voter behavior, because it's like a chessboard. Mm-hmm. And people who currently don't seem like they're on your side, the issue could evolve to the point where you could see that you have more in common with that entity than before. As a worker today, I might vote a certain way, but as a business owner in 15 years, I might see this issue a different way.
Yeah, it could be vice versa. I mean, the people that you believe that you have something in common with, for instance, they want to bring jobs back.
Right.
I want a job. And the cost of them bringing that job back is my loss of health care. Yeah. I didn't think about that, but I did want a job. Right. Now I don't have health care, and now I'm upset about that, and I'm sick.
And we say health care like it's just, you know, like it's a brick. You know, now I don't have my brick health care, right. But health care is more like a briefcase, and it has compartments, and there are different pockets in that briefcase that go very deep because there is no incentive in this system to not overcharge and inflate and get as much money as possible that make these things expensive and all of this. And I think that is the stuff that people kind of have a fatigue about, you know, going down these rabbit holes about certain issues. But I am championing, don't get lost in the details. Don't get lost in the weeds. Acknowledge that the weeds are there, but don't get lost there. It is enough to act, period. Because the way that we are currently set up, we act and then we reassess and then we act and then we reassess. So the encouragement here is to act because, one, midterms are not always like we said, the voter turnout is usually lower, but this one might be different because people feel a certain type of way. They're very energized, very motivated. We have more women running for office this midterm election than we've ever had, I believe. And that goes for both parties. You know, just women are just rising to the occasion to at least run for office. And again, there are some major questions. You know, the major feather in the cap right now, I think, federally or, you know, through Congress are these tax cuts. But if people are honest about how those tax cuts have even impacted them over this past year, that might impact how they vote, because everybody didn't get a sweet deal out of those.
I mean, you should see by now what your check is looking like.
Exactly. With your
tax cut. If it's not that much different, but you still go to the gas pump and you're seeing a big difference there, you're seeing what's happening.
Exactly.
You're going to start to see differences in agriculture, in goods that we use to
everyday
build
goods. Yeah. Everyday goods. You know, people might not be following the tariffs issue that pops up that is important, but that is our trade. Those are the extra import export taxes that are added to goods that we either have here or don't have here. And protectionist tariffs have started wars. Okay. So I'm just going, you know, that's where I'm going
to
end that.
We're going to have to come back, because watching this midterm election, this is an opportunity for the 81% of white evangelicals that did betray the other,
you know what,
Christian
you did,
brothers and sisters.
You know what you did.
We're gonna see how this goes.
You know what you did.
Yeah, we can't cover that now because we already over time. But thank you for sticking with us as we put on our political pundit hats.
This is our political hat, you know. And before we go, we just wanted to highlight a couple of things. Check your voter registration. Okay. Check your voter registration. Make sure that you are registered for your current polling place, and make sure that you make your deadline. Deadlines in like Maryland and DC are middle October, like October 16th. So check your registration. Don't wait till the day of the election. And what else do I have here? You can ask around for voter education resources. A good outlet would be your local NAACP affiliate or your local AFL-CIO. Like, I'm into unions, and I feel like they cover the gamut on certain issues. But you can also reach out to local resources, your mayor's office, online. But don't be afraid to educate yourself on an issue or on the slate before you get to your polling place. Sometimes there's a lot of pressure there. It's like all these boxes to check. You didn't even know all these people were running. So try to avoid that. And then just make sure that however you're going to do this, that you're aligned and that you're affirmed. You know, don't do something in private that you can't stand by publicly. I feel like that's what 2016 was, and we just need to be better than that. And that's all I got for y'all. But I love you.
All right, y'all. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.